Down at Third Man, the cricket podcast, talking all things cricket, from club cricket to million-pound franchises to the Test Match Arena, proudly supported by Woodstock Cricket. Welcome to the Down at Third Man podcast, and we've made it to episode 3. We're still actually getting people listening, we're still getting good feedback, and miraculously we haven't had any complaints even after some of the talk about sledging and helmets last week. Before we get started, just want to say a big thank you to Woodstock, who continue to support us. If you're looking for some new kit for the season, go and have a little look on their website. They've got plenty of stuff on, and it's all at a decent price as well, which is always great. Right, today's show is going to be a bit different to the last two. We're still going to go through world cricket. We're still going to go through club cricket. We're still going to do the Room 101. And I've still got my co-host, Jono and Aid, with me. But we're also going to be joined by Andy Mountford from Betley. And we've also got an interview with James Bracey from England and Gloucestershire. So to start off with, we'll see how the three lads are who are with me tonight. So, Aid, how are we doing?
I'm not too bad, mate. How are you?
I'm all right, mate. I'm all right.
You're still loving
life? Still loving life, and haven't had a knock on the door from any disgruntled people who may have been mentioned last week's always a
give
positive.
Give it time.
Yeah.
It's a long way from Australia, mate.
True. Jono, how are you?
Oh, sound, mate. Delightful, mate. Got my toasties in my pocket and all sorts. I'm ready to go.
We'll mention that in a little while. And making his debut on the podcast, but hopefully it won't be his only appearance, is Andy from Betley. How are we, Andy?
How nice for you?
I'm all right. I'm here. I'm with you boys. What more could I want on a Thursday night? Answers on the back of a postcard for that one. Right, before we get into the James Bracey interview, we're going to do a little bit of cricket news. Now, I'll be honest, cricket news is going to be really more like Aussie bashing, so Jono will be excited. Because
Best ball in the world.
Exactly. Because the three main bits of cricket news this week all seem to relate to Australians, and none of them are particularly positive. So we'll start off on the Big Bash. On Big Bash, it's the final on Saturday. We've got Scorchers versus the Sixers, and it will see James Vince versus AJ Tai, Volume 2. Now, Volume 1 last week was a contentious moment. Vince was on 98, not out. They needed one to win. AJ Tai comes on to bowl, and to be frank, he bowled it so short, he almost broke his own toe. And let's be honest, James Vince could have been on a stepladder and he still probably wouldn't have been able to get the bat on ball. So obviously, the Sixers won and the Scorchers went through to, ended up going into the other knockout match, which they've won and made the final. First of all, do you boys think AJ Tai meant the wide ball? Because I'll be honest, I think he definitely did.
Duh.
100% yes, mate.
It's like, come on, Turner. Did
well,
he mean it?
You saw me tweet, Turner, which I'm not going to repeat on here.
I saw your tweet. I saw many tweets. I made my own tweet about the fact that I thought he meant it. I have heard many Australians, unsurprisingly,
shock,
saying that AJ Tai just isn't that sort of bloke. He didn't
mean
You know what?
That I think that might well be my most hated comment in all of sports. He's just not like that. So it's like I tried to say, like, have you ever seen, like, you ever get yourself lost in, like, a YouTube hole and you go on YouTube and end up watching, like, American courtroom dramas and they're like, you get people standing up for the defence going, yeah, they're not like that, Your Honour. I swear to you, they're not actually like that. They might have beaten this woman to an absolute pulp, but I'm telling you, they're just not like that. And you want to go, yeah. Don't mean they haven't done it though, have they? You know what I mean? They're getting the butt through and that and pal. Oh, God, it just makes me... I get why people are trying to defend people's character and stuff like that, but that was a shambles. That was an absolute shambles. He should be proper. What a shock. What nationality is he? Why should I not be surprised? What was it I said the other week? Specialists in shithousery is what they are.
True, and I think everyone by now knows that me, you, and Aid are probably not going to very often be on the side of the Aussie. So, is Andy going to join us, or is Andy going to say, actually, no, AJ Tai, salt of the earth?
No, it's pretty indefensible, isn't it? You wouldn't sort of expect to see it from a Sunday league bowler, would you? So not a bloke who, that's his job to chuck it up the other end somewhere near the batsman.
Yeah, I think that's the thing. I commented on it after.
So to coin a term then, Andy, he's a shithouse. He's a shithouse.
Just try and get him out.
I would honestly sooner see him beamed than bowling horrible. Like, don't get me wrong, in my early days of junior cricket in the second team, I have beamed a couple of people that I didn't like.
You bowled?
I've beamed a couple of people I didn't like. I've beamed a couple of people I couldn't get out when I was like a 12-year-old kid. Just beam him. He's smack 90-odd. He's English. Just beam him.
Just hurt him.
Just hurt him. What are we messing about with bowling wide?
Yeah, that's one thing I didn't get. And I was saying, I'm sure I've read before about people being banned for bowling deliberate wides and deliberate no balls. And I know it's been seen before, and I think it was in the Caribbean Premier League. I think Evan Lewis was on 99. And was it Bravo or someone deliberately bowled
a no ball?
Halfway down the track.
And then he just walked up to him and said something to him, didn't he? Yeah, not against us, son.
I just don't. I don't get it. Last year, there was twice we were involved in a game in the twos whereby someone was on 99 with a ball to go. Now, one time I was captain, one time I was like vice, and both times
You found someone getting 99 in second team cricket.
I know, mate. That's how bad we are.
You must have bowled a few overs then, Turner.
Wow.
Mate, I didn't bowl any either, worryingly. shows how bad my bowling is compared to the rest. But both times, it wasn't a case of, right, let's just lob something down here that he ain't going to be able to hit. It was a case of, right, let's get him out. And both times, the poor sod got ran out. Second time, didn't feel too bad. The first time, when we found out it was just the first time this kid had got into the 90s, felt a little bit cruel, to be fair, because he was only like a young lad. But I don't understand it. I don't understand
how he says laughing.
Yeah,
the poor lads first ran himself out in the 90s. Oh well.
I wouldn't mind if he'd got like obviously a deep square leg and chucked a short one in the intention of getting him out. Have everyone else in and just have a deep square and bounce him and try to get him out that way. But it was just shocking.
Yeah, I don't understand the professional sportsman ending up with that being the fault in the red. No, I'm going to get him out. I'm going to spoil the party that way. No, I am going to deliberately do something because I aren't good. Basically, saying I aren't good enough to get him out, which
Do you not just think as well? There's kind of like no moral sporting code there either. Like,
yeah,
what? There's no one in the sporting world that have looked at him and just gone, yeah, he's done the right thing there. No doubt about it. No doubt about it. He's done the right thing there. No one is going to say that.
20 million who are probably thinking that.
Are they Australian?
Yeah.
Well, again mate, you've obviously not been paying enough attention to me on this podcast. You've not been paying enough attention.
Vince's face made me laugh though. He's like, he's staring at him. I think Jason Roy comes over, doesn't he, and he's like, try to calm him down, and then he's just like, yeah, it's all right, mate, it's all right. But he clearly just wanted not.
Oh, his interview after was the most passive aggressive thing. I thought James Vince doesn't seem like the bloke who can get angry. Oh, it was so passive aggressive. It was like, don't ask me about it. Ask him. He knows what he's done. I was like, ooh.
You'd have to get him a pint in the bar after.
He did look a very angry man. I had a lot of time for that, actually. That was like, you're a shithouse, mate. I don't want anything to do. I did like that.
That was a proper response. That was probably the other thing that's annoyed me listening to the Aussies, who were actually blaming Vince. They were like, well, it's his fault. The over before against Liam Livingston, he chose to take three singles. Well, yeah, but not being funny. So wouldn't anyone in the 90s, if you got an easy single on, you're probably going to take it. He wasn't expecting Daniel Hughes to top edge one for a four, the ball after. I don't know how you can blame Vince for that. But we'll move on to the next bit of Aussie bashing for Jono.
Thank you.
And that, although technically I think he's going to defend one Aussie here, and that is, of course, Cheese and Ham Toastygate, which was all about, it came out that the Aussie players have leaked to their press that they don't particularly like how strict, how micromanaged it all by Justin Langer, which I don't think comes as a surprise if you've watched the documentary, The Test, because I think it comes across that he's a bit overbearing anyway. But then, obviously, the headline they led with was the fact that he had to tell Marnus Labuschagne, of all people, to not take a cheese and ham toastie out in his pocket for the last couple of sessions versus India at the Gabba.
I can't believe I've just heard this on an official sports podcast. I can't even, never mind the fact that there's four blokes talking about it on a casual podcast, the fact that this is actually made international news.
Question, though.
It was the lead story in Australia for around 12 hours, apparently.
If it was a bacon cheese oatcake, would it be different?
No.
Mate, I wouldn't let you walk out with a bacon and cheese oatcake after tea.
You let me have a beer, mate, when we got someone lying down.
I didn't let you. You just did it and I was too far away to do anything about it. There's a big difference there. Allowing it to happen and letting you do it. Two very, very different things.
Yeah, it was very sneaky.
Yeah,
special shout out to a great club cricket moment that day, though. Unnamed player from Roe Park. Shout out to Roe Park, by the way. Love playing at Roe Park. Great place to play. Unnamed Roe Park player. He was absolutely steaming before a ball had been bowled in the match. And Lala will back me up there, won't you, Lala?
Yes, very. Top off, mate.
Top off. Short shorts. Great day. Very, very good day. Enjoyed myself greatly. Thanks very much.
Does anyone... What do people think? Because I'll be honest, I think... A, the players have been a bit tardy, but B, I think it shows that they've got must have some serious problems. Because, yeah, I know they've been in a bubble, and the Aussie press that are now trying to make out that there's nothing wrong and they're still looking ahead to the Ashes and they're still going to smash us are saying, oh, it's just because they've been cooped up in hotel rooms together for so long. But I think it's concerning that Aussie players are going out of their own way to drop their own captain in it. And Justin Langer started off being dead defensive and then suddenly must have realised, oh shit, shit has hit the fan and I'm getting hammered here. And suddenly was on every Aussie. He was on like random chat shows. It was like, can you imagine Chris Silverwood turning up on like Loose Women to defend himself? It was like that. Like, what is he like? And saying, oh, I've learnt from this. I'm going to be a little bit less harsh on the lads. I was like, what am I listening to?
One of the things that you wouldn't expect anything different from him, though, would you, that lad? Like, it's just,
he's weird.
It's like, I can imagine playing with him is like playing with a really annoying junior. Like, he is the club cricket equivalent of playing with, like, I don't know, let's all try and give an example that we can relate to. It's like playing with, like, the club secretary's nephew. Thinks he's class. Proper annoying, wants to bat and bowl and give shit.
Ali Card, mate.
Yeah, I actually got terrible, terrible banter, and most of your team probably hate him. We've all got one. Andy Smirky, so he knows we've all got one. Like, without a shadow of a doubt, do you not think it's like a really sad state of affairs? Like, Justin Langer comes from like the school of cricket where people proper feared and respected Australian cricket. Like, he's an absolute legend. The bloke's a legend. And they're absolutely hanging a legend out to dry.
Over now a fucking the papers over a cheese sandwich.
Over a toasty. Do you know what I mean? Like, even I think he said it. I sent you a message to him, didn't I? I was like, the bloke is a legend of Australian cricket. And he's having to defend himself in the press about a cheese toasty. And this is a professional athlete. I know I've said this before. Professional athlete. Cheese toasty.
Yeah, I'll be honest, as you say, he's a professional, and the only time I've ever seen food on a cricket pitch is probably Fred Brown. Remember, he used to stuff, you know, the little mini sausage rolls, he used to love sticking a couple of them in his pocket, and he'd open the bowl in from one end, and then he'd, while he was down at fine leg, he'd just sneak a little sausage roll in. I can't see why probably... one of the stars of cricket with the bat at the moment, upcoming stars, wants to take out a greasy cheese and ham toasty. And as someone said, can you imagine if it came out that actually he was taking it out there because he wanted to rub the grease on the fucking ball? Mm-hmm. No sandpaper, grease.
Do you know what
I think this is a great opportunity to go around the room, to be honest, to hear our favourite club cricket food stories. I think we should let our guest go first, to be honest with you, Tim.
Oh, pressure's on Andy.
Go on, Andy. Have you got a good club cricket food
story?
Oh,
I've got a great one once you've...
Go on, Ash. You go. Well, I have a chance to...
We had a Muslim player play for us. Not lovely lad. Not necessarily the brightest spark I've ever played with, but a lovely lad. However,
is that one of my favourite scenes? Nice lad, thick as fuck.
Maybe so, yeah. And he went up to the... It was at Oakmore. He went up to the tees and decided he wanted some of the potatoes, the homemade potatoes that they made. He piled it up onto his plate, and it took one of the other lads, Haroon, to ask him what on earth he was doing. He was like, "What do you mean?" He was like, "It's got bacon in it." He goes, "What? I thought it was ham." And my head just fell off at that point. I didn't know what to say. I didn't know what to do other than just laugh. But I've never seen anything like it. It was one of the funniest things I've seen. Because he genuinely didn't understand. Genuinely did not get what we were
on. I haven't got a food one, Tina, but I can remember playing a game with Ram. And I think he might have been like square leg or something. And he was meant to be backing up. And someone threw the ball in. Keeper's obviously clean missed it. And Ram's on his phone checking the Liverpool score. It's gone for 4 overthrows.
Oh, God. Shout out to Ram, who's... likes to tweet about Man United more than he does Liverpool, but he seems
I'm more of a shout out to Rendezvous Fast Food.
Rendezvous Fast Food.
Absolutely. If they want to sponsor the pod at any point with some free takeaway.
We would love everything.
I'd rather have that than cricket gear.
Right then. So, Jono and Andy, it's down to you two who's going to go on the food story.
Oh, I can't. I'm giving up with toasties. It's all on Andy.
The only ones we used to have was when he was playing Cheshire League, was before you had sort of tea ladies. Well, you don't have tea ladies. It's every player does one a week. And it's sort of on a rota throughout the season. The number of players who would forget it was their week, and you'd end up having to get some random spectator to come and do a tea while you're hoping that the first innings wouldn't finish. Because they haven't gone to Sainsbury's to buy it yet.
Yeah, I must admit, one of the funniest things I've seen is that we told the lad he was on cheese oatcakes. Now, to be fair, he'd only recently moved to Stoke. He didn't know what that meant. So he turned up with probably a 500-gram block of cheddar cheese, 12 oatcakes, and that was it. And he just left them on the side. I was like, it's 10 minutes till the game starts, mate. I'm not making you cheese oatcakes now.
I honestly think I'm very, very proud of the tea that we have at Bignall End. And one of the items that I'm a particular fan of is the way that we do cheese oatcakes. So I don't know whether you've ever heard anyone do this before, but I wouldn't recommend it if you've got any hopes of living beyond the age of like 40. We butter the inside and outside of our oatcakes.
Yes.
It's absolutely despicable that any human being would do it, but honestly, just one a week absolutely sees you right.
I can imagine. That sounds beautiful. I'm actually thinking in the next few weeks, we might have to bring cricket teas into one of the club cricket discussions. Right, the last thing on the Aussies before we get on to James Bracey, because I'm sure people would rather listen to him than us. They then decided Australia, after weeks of planning, to decide to cancel the South Africa tour. Now, understandable in some senses, because South Africa is not having a great time with COVID. But weirdly, the reason that they seem to have cancelled it seems to be the exact same problem that they would have had 3 months ago when they first arranged it, which was, if one of the Aussie players catches it, we're not sure if we'll be able to get them home for treatment because of the quarantine rules. Now, that's not changed for months. So I just don't quite understand, and a lot of people are saying they magically are able to play England and India, but they can't manage to play any other side. Do we think it's shit from the Aussies, or do we just think it's just part how the world is, and it's just bad luck on South Africa?
Well, it's obviously shit from the Aussies. What else am I going to say?
Well, you know.
Keeps Payne in the job for a bit longer anyway, doesn't it?
Well, that does mean that Tim Payne is basically guaranteed to still be skipper with any luck for the Ashes.
I think what a win.
I think that means that they might have one test at most before the Ashes against possibly they might have play like Afghanistan, but I don't even think that's likely. So
we've got about 15, haven't we?
Yeah. So, has anyone got any thoughts on that? I know a lot of people have been quite wound up by saying, oh, it's just more proof the big three run cricket and it's not fair on the rest. And people moan that when they play South Africa, South Africa aren't much cop or what do you expect and all that. I think it's poor from the Aussies, but I think it's one of them things where you can't really absolutely hammer them for it because they're going to always put the players out first.
Yeah, it's hard to...
We came halfway through a one-day series, didn't we? So we can't necessarily have a... Much as I would like to have a go at them.
This is the attitude I like. Andy can come again. That's in tune with what we want on this podcast. Yeah, we can't really say it. Plus, I mean, I'm really interested. In fact, I'm really interested to ask this question later. But like, as someone who's been to South Africa and watched cricket over there, I don't know whether you have, Andy, but I would go over there and watch cricket in a heartbeat. So
yeah.
I would never mind go and play. So I'm hoping.
Sounds like a dream, to be fair.
I presume they wouldn't have had a particularly nice time of it in the hotel or what. It's not like you can go out and experience everything it's got to offer, but.
Yeah. And you were saying that was part of the problem with ours, wasn't it? They were saying that you could go out, you could go and play golf, whereas when you were quarantining at Old Trafford or wherever, you're just basically walking around the outfield three times a day. And so there's
Have you seen the videos of the England fast bowler corps on Warzone?
Wow. I mean, I could do with our squad, to be fair.
I don't know what's better, Saqib Mahmood on Warzone or Stuart Broad's absolutely horrific posh commentary.
Oh, yeah, Stuart Broad likes to talk. He's horrific, isn't it? He has a running commentary. He is like the John Motson of Warzone. Fair play to him.
Saqib Mahmood, though, he has quality with the sniper, mate.
It's disgusting. That video is like 2 minutes of absolute disgustingness.
I can't believe I'm about to give him another shout-out, but... About 2 or 3 months ago, I think it was in the second lockdown, we were actually playing a game of war. I was playing a game of Warzone with Ollie Wilson, and he did kill Joffre Archer.
Did he?
No, he did.
Yeah.
Who was to go add on with Anderson, Broad, and Mahmood anyway? Because I couldn't see because he was gone. He was already out of
it. I don't know, mate.
KIA.
he was dead. But yeah, we checked all of Joffre's Twitches to make sure it was him, and it definitely was him that we'd. Killed.
That's claim to fame now.
That is Wilson's claim to fame. The fact that like there was four of us, one of Joffre, and yeah, it wasn't like it was a great kill by any stretch of the imagination, shall we say? But
have you seen some of the setups that they've got there with all them TVs and stuff like that?
I know,
like,
yeah. Loving life.
Have you ever been away and taken a PlayStation with you? No.
No. Well, a PSP mate would have been best.
Oh, I think when I was working away, the Xbox was straight in the bag.
Wow, that doesn't shock us.
Also, did you see Ben Stokes' video of his hotel room? He uses late deodorant.
Yeah, I do that. Do you not do that?
Here we go.
I think this is a conversation for another day.
I've literally got nothing else in the house or anything, but...
You won't get on it. It's nice. Leaves less white marks and it smells nice. Stay fresh for longer, man. It's all right.
And with that advert for Dove female... fragrances. I think it's maybe time we leave the Aussie bashing behind and we go over to our interview with James Bracey. So we interviewed James on Sunday following the news about Zach Crawley yesterday. I'd say James is very close now to probably getting an England debut at some point in this series, depending on how things go. So we had a little chat with him while he was out in Chennai. So take a listen and let us know what you think. Right, so it's 2:30 p.m. on Sunday in England, but it's also 8 p.m. over in Chennai. And we're really lucky today to be joined by someone from the England bubble. Now, it's not a cleaner or one of the hotel staff. We're fortunate today to be joined by Gloucestershire and England's James Bracey. How are we, James?
Yeah, thanks, Ash. I'm good, mate. Just counting down the hours. Hopefully get released soon enough. But enjoying being out here.
Good, good. So how is India? How is life in the bubble? Is it as tough as everyone imagines?
It is tough. I mean, obviously, I think I just look at it from the perspective that, home's not particularly normal at the moment. There's I speak to the lads at Gloss and they're sort of restricted in what they can do, what prep they can get done for the season. So I feel like, as hard as it might seem at the moment, you know, in quarantine, I feel like I'm lucky to have the opportunity to be out there, get some good outdoor practice and obviously be around the test side. And, you know, for as long as I'm out here, there's a chance that, you know, an opportunity might come up. So I'm hoping that if that chance does come, then I, you know, can take it. But if not, it's great prep for the English summer.
Yeah, Brett. Well, I can imagine it's a bit warmer than it is back in, well, we're in Stoke, and I can tell you it's freezing in Stoke today.
So what are the struggles of bubble life and how you're finding it, trying to keep busy?
I just think it's the notion that you sort of, you can't go out. It's not like you have the choice. So obviously we're very lucky. We've got some nice hotels, some good social spaces. We can still interact with each other. But, you know, being in countries like Sri Lanka, where I've never been before, and sort of the lads tell you about some of the great stuff that you can do there, things you can see, you know, the beaches are lovely and you see like the drones going around the ground on the telly.
Like,
I wouldn't have had any clue that that was there, because you just literally, you're in the hotel, which again is lovely, drive literally straight down one road to Gore's ground and then get off the bus and you're in the ground and you don't see any of it. So that's not like, that's not ideal. It'd be nice to get out and see things. You know, we get looked after really well. Training's intense. You get a load of time to work on your game. From a cricket perspective, it's brilliant. I think it's even better. There's less distractions. But yeah, that not being able to go out and explore is a bit depressing.
Are you on the war zone hard with the rest of the boys, or?
I'm actually not at all. I've played COD previously and I'm terrible at it. So I've just given up. I mean, they're all crazy about it. I am much more into my FIFA.
Yeah, not me.
Yeah, like Ultimate Team's going through the roof. I think I've played it more in the last few days than I've played it ever. So just that, getting on with the T10, watching a bit of that, catching up with the football, just trying to keep myself busy. But no, they're all massive on it. I've sort of learned a bit about it being here, but wouldn't play it myself.
Yeah.
What do you think of the T10?
It's all right to watch. I think it's a bit rogue, like just a bit of a mishmash of, like, you've got some obviously some unbelievable players, and then obviously a load of the local talent. So obviously, I don't know much about like Emirates cricket, but it's quite entertaining. Yeah, it's good to have three games in evenings. Pretty good as well.
Yeah, certainly fast paced, and some of the techniques are a bit interesting. I mean, you've got Shahzad and Azam, who are carrying more weight than me and Dude, which just takes some doing. And then you've got that lad who's slinging it from below shoulder. I just don't know what that's about.
Yeah. Been watching that game a minute ago, and Jamie Overton hit him for a couple of sixes, but just like, it looks like he almost like walks up and just like lets it go like an underarm. It's weird. But then, yeah, there's all sorts of talent around. It's a good chance to see sort of some of the Afghan and Emirates. And
so obviously you've come into the England squad, but I guess you've joined the England squad at quite a weird time with all the bubbles going on. How have you found that sort of transition into being a part of the England squad?
Yeah, exactly. I think I was sort of at the stage where I was playing, obviously, Lions cricket with sort of a vision of starting to work my way up. Obviously, it came right at a time where bigger squads and reserves and stuff started to come into play. So I guess from that aspect, I was quite lucky. It was a bit daunting going into a big group of like 30 blokes as one of sort of the two or three new blokes, really. You know, it's sort of fast-tracked. It's happened quicker than I thought. So just being around, you know, getting access to the best coaches, seeing how some of the more experienced guys go around and do things. Obviously, I haven't played as much cricket in the last year as I'd have liked, but I feel like I've learned a lot of things. And I think, so we've talked about this, I've talked about this with some of the coaches, like it's rare that guys get this much sort of access and experience amongst the group before they make a debut. Like, I was speaking to Ollie Pope about it. He said, I was sat with him and Stuart Broad last week, and he said, like, the first time Broad met Pope was when he made his debut, just, like, rocked up on the day. It's the first time he's met him. So I think it's a good chance for me to have obviously got to know people and sort of bedded a bit into the group before then. Hopefully I make my debut at some point.
Yeah, I guess that's a big one, really. You don't hear stories about people like being called up on a Thursday and then playing the test on the Friday back in like the 80s and 90s. But I guess you don't realise that it's maybe not too different normally, even now. So, yeah, it's definitely a different one.
Yeah, I think obviously the centrally contracted guys play obviously their international cricket and don't really play much county cricket these days. So you don't really come across them. Like, I wouldn't have come across Broad or Anderson or, you know, the likes of Root that often before. So, yeah, it's great to have been a part of that group sort of prior to being sort of amongst the main 15, really.
So what's it been like working with, like, James Foster and Joss Butler and obviously having Jack Callis in the ranks now?
Yeah, it's obviously amazing. I think I worked with a few of them in the summer, so the likes of Thorpe and Trott and Collingwood. And, like, they just keep adding names to that list. I mean, you sort of dream about, like, the best coaches to work with, and I think I've had a selection of all of them. Foster's brilliant. He's obviously speak to, you know, the likes of Joss and Folksy about him, and they couldn't speak highly enough of him. Obviously, he's an amazing keeper himself. Callis, obviously, he was a bit more sort of, obviously, no one had sort of come across him as a coach before, but the guys who had played against him sort of said good things. And obviously, with that much experience, you're not going to struggle in coaching. I think even if you're not the best coach on paper, he's got so much knowledge to give you. So I think I only got to work with him sort of two or three times around the tests going on. But, you know, he offers you two or three little bits that can take you a long way. Obviously, having scored so many runs, you can just take quite a bit from him.
Yeah, I know. I remember hearing Steve Armisen say, oh, just because they're a good player doesn't mean they're a good coach. But I think when you're Jack Callis and you've got them figures behind them stats, I think you're always going to be pretty good for tips.
Exactly. And if you're around a test side, you don't necessarily need to be coaching people, changing their techniques and all that sort of stuff. It's more just offering experience, you know, tactical. Assessing conditions is obviously key out here. He would have played a lot more than most people. So it's not a case of trying to change people. It was a case of giving people advice, and they can filter through that and take what they do from it.
Correct. So obviously, as you just said, obviously you're in different conditions. You're over in Asia. Have you found that sort of a difficult challenge? Obviously, we've seen that it's completely different, almost completely different cricket, really, opening up with spinners and stuff. So have you found it a challenge?
Yeah, it is a challenge. I think I benefited a lot from our trip to Mumbai last year. I think that was a big wake-up call for me. I had to make some big technical changes and almost reset my approach to spin. I'd never sort of come across anything like that. So I've sort of come here with a better base than I could have had, which I'm really grateful for. I also think it's until you get chucked in into a game, it's so hard to say you're good in these conditions or not. Obviously, Ruti showed us all how to play over the last two or three weeks. But again, he's got more experience. He's worked out a game plan and he knew more what to expect. I think Zach and Dom might have got, like, I read through Twitter and people are writing them off already. I think it's so hard to get a gauge in the nets of how you play spin. They've both got good games against spin. They've both got good options. I think it's just completely different. I net and the facilities over here aren't necessarily as good as we have at home. So even from the middle to the nets is so different. It's completely different conditions. So I think until you experience it, which, you know, a lot of the lads are for the first time now, I think it will definitely equip people better for India. And hopefully, you know, once I get out there, it will fall into place.
Well, how would you see us going in India? How would you fancy our chances?
Yeah, I think a lot of people will write us off. Obviously, they're so good at home. We've got quite a young side. And, you know, I think people will immediately think, obviously, India come in off the back of a great series win as well. People will probably expect them to be on top. But, you know, we know how, I think we've discussed it quite a lot, how we want to play over here. Hopefully, if people can stay fit, people can find form. You know, it's got to click at the right time. But there's no reason why we can't upset them and go in with a series win.
Well, obviously, India's the big focus at the moment. But then we've got the summer. And then after the summer, there's obviously what most people are considered the sort of the pinnacle of cricket in the Ashes. Obviously, you did really well on the Lions tour the other year, and obviously the England Lions were really successful. So a lot of people will obviously probably write England off again when it comes to the Ashes, but do you agree with that, or do you think we're better placed now than ever to go and do something?
Yeah, I mean, it's a massive year of cricket. There's so many tests, I'm losing track of who the hell we're playing, to be honest. I saw we're playing New Zealand the other day. I didn't even realise that was happening. But yeah, I think, I mean, I've only been part of obviously the Lions tour, but we as a group over there went really well. Like comfortably beat their A side, a strong A side. So, I mean, that combined with the lads, obviously more experienced lads who weren't there, you know, we've got a lot of players who have had some good experiences in Oz, and we'll be putting their hands up to be on that tour. You know, I think, again, there's no reason why we can't do well over there. We've got a good crop of seamers. We've got a lot of seamers who are a test match ready and good enough to be in the side. We were having this discussion the other day. It's like, we haven't got 24 blokes here just because we need 24 blokes. So there's 24 blokes here who could all go in the side and do a job. That's how we sort of feel. So, you know, we got enough batters, we've got enough bowlers, we've got a good crop of keepers. There's no reason why we can't do well over there. People say you need pace to do well in Oz. But, I mean, the toughest conditions for a seamer are probably where we are right now. And the likes of Jimmy and Stu and Woody have all been doing really well over here. There's no reason why we can't go over there and do the same.
Yeah, I think
what's it being like facing the seamers in the nets and stuff? Obviously, you've got the pace of Archer and Wood, and then you've obviously got Anderson and Broad, who can just move it around corners.
Yeah, they're all good in their different ways. Obviously, like they've all got very different strengths. Like it's surreal. I mean, they're so skillful. The likes of like Broad and Jimmy as well, to come out like to a place where it doesn't really do much, but they still feel like, you watch it and they still look like getting wickets all the time. Like they've worked really hard, developed like new deliveries, even though they're the most experienced lads in the squad, they're still like being innovative, bowling cutters and slower balls and reverse swing and that sort of stuff. Yeah, it's great. It's great practice. Can't say I don't like, I'm not a bit scared every time, because when Joff's running it, yeah, you know, it's not the nicest feeling in the world. Like you feel a bit claustrophobic as well. But, you know, it all preps you for what's to come, really. Like, if I want to play, you know, here in India, I'm going to have to get used to it, because there's no doubt Bumrah and whoever else is going to be bowling the speed of light. So, yeah, I can't wait. I really enjoy the opportunity.
So is your focus on getting a test spot, or do you have white ball ambitions as well?
I think everyone has ambitions to do it all, really. Everyone wants to be a multi-format cricketer. You see like how good our white ball setup is at the moment. It'd be great to be in that. But I feel like I've got a long way to go. I've only played sort of a handful of white ball games. You know, I've done pretty well when I've played 50 over cricket. 2020 cricket, I'm slowly sort of learning the trade as such. But yeah, I mean, there's always ambitions, but I think for now, you know, my focus has got to be on gaining a test cap. I think I'm in a good position to do so. Both with the gloves and the bat, you know, I think that's been a real strength, is the fact that I can sort of have both those parts in, and I think that's sort of my focus for the moment, for sure.
Yeah, I read an interview with you from, I think it was last summer, where you said like you expected to be knocking on the England door alongside sort of Sibley and Crawley, and yeah. So the fact that you're now knocking on the door alongside Butler and Folkes is sort of giving you that opportunity now in two positions, I guess, to get into the squad.
Yeah, I think it can play both ways. Like sometimes, obviously, you can sacrifice one at the expense of the other. You know, you can pursue batting and your keeping sort of takes a back seat. But I feel like over the last year, I've worked really hard to develop both. My strength's always been in my batting. And I think that's probably the main reason I'm here. But, you know, you never know, especially with rotation systems and stuff like that, with, you know, Johnny's gone home now. Joss is going home. I don't know whether it's after the first or second test. So, you know, there's always options and sort of opportunities if something happens to take up both spots. And I'd like to think that, you know, they've got faith in me with the bat and the gloves.
Yeah. So last question, because we don't want to keep you from your ultimate team for too long. just wondered what your hopes are, because you said that obviously this is a massive year, and I think everyone agrees it's one of the biggest years for cricket in a long while. So I just wonder what your hopes were for the year with both England and obviously Gloucestershire.
Yeah, obviously for now, the next 4 weeks is about, you know, continuing to improve my game, knock on the door, try and make a debut. That's sort of the ultimate goal at the moment. And I'd love to see us sort of be a part of us winning over here. You know, I think it would be such a massive achievement, such a special thing for the likes of myself. But like all the other lads, they said winning in India, when was it, 2012, 13,
about that time.
There's been a few lads obviously on that tour, and they said it was so special because it just doesn't happen. India just don't lose at home. That's sort of the sort of done thing. So that'd be really special. Obviously, it's one of the big tours. I mean, with Gloss, obviously, we're on the rise at the moment. We're developing a really talented squad. Came close in the T20 last year, so we'd like to give that another crack. The 50 over comp's obviously a great opportunity for us. We're only missing three players at the moment, assuming more don't get picked up in the draft. So that's a great opportunity for silverware. And we just want to keep building our four-day cricket. I think us going into Division One, obviously it's not divisions at the moment, but we get written off a little bit, I think. So it'd be great to show the likes of Somerset, Surrey, Hampshire this season that, you know, we can challenge them and put us in a good position if it does go back to the division system. And I think ultimately we want to produce more England players. You know, the likes of myself coming into the system, there's certainly other blokes in that side who can do it as well. So that's definitely a goal for us. Silverware, make our four-day team even better and get more lads in this setup.
Fantastic. Well, a big, big thank you for joining us on this Sunday afternoon or Sunday evening over in India.
No worries, my pleasure.
And good luck, obviously, over in India. And then once you're back in the UK with Gloucestershire and England, if you're picked again, which I'm sure you will be.
Thanks. Cheers, lads.
Cheers.
Thank you very much.
Cheers, Ed. Thanks.
Looking for a new cricket equipment partner for yourself or your club can sometimes be tricky. With so many options to choose from, how do you make the right choice? When you want quality, value and service, there really is only one place to start. For more than a decade, Woodstock Cricket have been producing award-winning, high-performance cricket bats from their Shropshire workshop. Matched with their classy soft goods, luggage and accessories, Woodstock Cricket really do tick all the boxes. Get in touch with Woodstock Cricket and find out why many loyal clubs, players and international customers can't be wrong at info@woodstockcricket.co.uk.
So welcome back to the podcast. Really good interview there from James. Really nice lad to talk to. Clearly a really good cricketer. He's had firmly screwed on, and I'm sure he'll be getting himself an England debut soon. Big thanks from us to him, because to give up his time on a Sunday afternoon or a Sunday night as it was there, and to drag him away from his FIFA Ultimate Team, it was really nice of him to do that. So big thanks to James. And hopefully next week we'll have another interview with another person who has been in and around the England setup over the last few years as well. So keep an eye out for that. Right, I think it's time we get on to the main part of this podcast, and that has got to be the India versus England preview. So I think we'll start off with India, because I feel like we're going to talk a hell of a lot about England. So, India, boys, what are we thinking? They've come off the back of a 3-1 win, 2-1 win, tell a lie, over in Australia. They won at the Gabbatoir. If you ask any Indian fan, they're about to spank us 4-0 because they're the best team ever. What do you make of them? I'll start with Andy.
Yeah, I mean, they're clearly a good side. I mean, I personally didn't think they'd win a game in Australia. Particularly once Kohli had gone home, but they seem to have a ridiculous amount of strength and depth. They can win in Brisbane with what was essentially their third team, a completely new bowling attack. Then I think Mr. Root and Mr. Stokes have got to bat very well for us to avoid a 4-0 defeat. But you never know. I mean, if such a funny time that we might shock them and take a game to a fifth day or something.
4-0 England, mate.
Don't we need four? If we win 4-0, we can still make the final of the World Test Championship. We'll that's right, isn't it?
Then we'll be on the aisle.
I think if we win 4-0, 3-0, or I think there's another result at like 4-3-1 might as well. But let's be honest, I don't think we're making the World Test Championship. I think it's whether it's India or Australia.
That's a fix anyway, that is. The point system is nice.
The point system's dreadful, but that's for another day, let's be fair. So, come on, Aid, give us your view on India.
Yeah, they are going to beat us, aren't they? Let's be honest. Their spin bowlers are miles better. They're probably going to bat longer than us. Like Andy was saying, Root and Stokes have got to get majority of the runs for us to even stay in the contest. We might be lucky to get one win or one draw, because obviously could be 600 plays 500 in one of the games. But yeah, my prediction...
Don't do predictions yet. That's for the end.
Sorry, mate.
Pressure's on then, honestly. Jono, what do you think?
I think pretty similar to the two guys, really. I see them as a very, very similar side to Sri Lanka, but just a bit better. It's like Sri Lanka's better, bigger brother, really. They bat a bit better. They bowl, spin a bit better. The seamers are better. They're just a bit better all round. And I think it's going to be even tougher to play in India than it was in Sri Lanka, because I don't think those decks in Sri Lanka were quite as bad as anyone was expecting them to be. I think they probably actually suited us a little bit more than we all thought they would. I thought they'd just prep like an absolute raging snake pit, and it wasn't. And I think we might see that a bit more in India, especially like third, fourth, fifth day. So I think we'll be lucky to get a game off them. I really do. I think we'll be lucky.
Couple of interesting things for you, just based on, because you were mentioning the pitch. Has anyone seen the story of the Chennai curator? A man with a businessman with several degrees in business, never actually done any form of professional pitch before, but he's a good man manager and he knows how to deal with people. So he has sorted the pitch, apparently. He says he is aiming for it to be green on the first day and give a lot to the seam bowlers, be a batsman's pitch on day two and three, and then become for the spinners on back end of day four and day five. So it's going to be an absolute raging turner of a dust bowl, I would imagine.
It's going to be like Nasser Hussain, mate. We're going to win the toss and bowl, and they're going to get 700.
Probably, yeah.
Where have you seen this nonsense about who's prepping the pitch, by the way?
It's all over Crick Info and everything. They are loving the fact that some random businessman has been given the job of curating the pitch for a massive test series. The first time there's been a test in something like 10 years in Chennai, they've given it to a random businessman. I don't quite understand why.
So if it's going to be a big green seamer, do you reckon we bowl first and hopefully bowl them out on the first day and then try and
I think he may be lying a little bit. Let's be honest. But the other thing they've done is ask for a special ball.
If at least three out of four tests didn't turn from day one, I'd be very, very surprised.
Yeah. But they've asked for a special ball. They've asked for the SG ball that is basically a Duke's. They've asked for a ball with a really proud seam on it. It's really dark red. And basically, it's their version as close as they can get to a Duke's ball, which some people seem to think might help England. Other people think, no, it just means that Ravi Ashwin will be able to turn it square from the first over of the day. So I don't know if that'll have, either of them things will have any effect on the game, but I just found it hilarious that there was a random businessman making the pitch, and for some bizarre reason, they've decided to change the ball for the game, weirdly. So looking a bit more at India, what are we thinking they're going to line up like then, lads?
I don't know, but I just can't believe that it's Jasprit Bumrah's debut in India.
Did you enjoy that fact, mate?
That is an absolutely fantastic fact, and I did not believe you until I checked it myself. It's an outstanding fact.
Yeah, a shocker, I would say. Not
How many tests has he played? He must have played like 20 tests as well.
I think he's played something like 18 tests, has he? 19 tests. He's been Australia twice, England. I think he's been England, New Zealand, West Indies, South Africa and Australia twice or something like that, but would never played home tests. Yeah, he likes a holiday, I think, is the message from that. So
doesn't fancy Mumbai in the middle of February, the lad doesn't.
Fair play to him. So I think we can all agree that the top six is surely going to be the top six. It's going to be Sharma and Gill to open, which I don't think anyone that's particularly English is going to particularly want to see. I think we'd much rather see Prithvi Shaw, having seen him.
Yeah, but even he gets 300 against us at some point.
Probably, maybe. Yeah, because we all know that Nair went and got 300 in his one game against us.
He's never been seen since.
Yeah, never been seen since.
That's Andy's strength and depth there. He's just going on about it. You could play a third team. Yeah. You could probably play a third team against us and still be fine.
Yeah. I think we all know, obviously, you're going to have Pujari, you're going to have Kohli, you're going to have Rahane. Kohli's confirmed today that Pant will play six and he will keep the gloves, because there was some talk from the Indians that they were considering Saha because they don't trust Pant with the gloves, because apparently he's one of the worst keepers in the global game when standing.
That's understandable
up
because he can't concentrate.
Well, yeah. But he isn't playing Saha, they're playing Pant. So also the debate really is what bowling attack they go with. Now, some people are saying three seamers, going boom, Bumrah, Siraj and Sharma, with Ashwin and one of Axar, Patel, Kuldeep Yadav and Washington Sundar. Others are saying you go three spinners and two seamers. What do we reckon? Or, like me, do you think it's a 50-50 and I not really know where they're going
to
go with it?
I don't think it matters, to be honest. Whatever ball and attack you've got, mate. It's one of them. We can be like, oh, yeah, well, he's decent. Oh, yeah, so they'll bring him in. Yeah, he's pretty decent. I've seen that Patel meant be playing, isn't he, I think, at seven.
They seem to think Axar Patel will play because he's a left-arm spinner, so they're thinking...
I think they'll go three spinners and two seamers. Probably Patel, Yadav, Ashwin, and then, obviously... Well, it depends on...
You think Yadav? I think Yadav won't play. I think if they play three spinners, I would guess they will go with left-armer Patel. They'll go with Washington Sundar because he can bat a bit and he did well in Brisbane, and then obviously Ravi Ashwin is guaranteed. Although, just as a point, who here thinks Ravi Ashwin is a good all-rounder?
He's got four more test hundreds in the Tim Payne, mate.
He has, but do you want to know what his average is in the last, like, 3 years?
Is it rubbish?
17. If you only count, like, the last 18 months, 2 years, it goes down to about 14, I think, or something daft.
That's steady at number 8.
That's what happens, mate, when you let bowlers play like a bowler. So if you think about Stuart Broad now. Stuart Broad backs like a bowler. Whereas when he first started playing for England, he like looked like he could be a genuine... Don't forget that lad's got 140 odd at Lords.
Yeah.
And England. Right now he looks like he's capable of the hoik and the sweep and that's it.
But it's effective, that's what matters, mate.
Oh, wow.
Archer came in with a great reputation for being a pseudo all-rounder, didn't he? But I've never seen him hit the ball in.
To be fair, in that video it's Sussex second 11, mate, he was smashing it everywhere.
Yeah. He looked very good against them kids.
Stick a coloured kit on him and tell him he's in India and he's sound. He hits further than anyone, but sadly we're in whites.
That IPL game where he hit sixes and about eight balls or something, wasn't it?
Yeah, he's definitely got it in his locker. But
you wouldn't mind if he just came in and gave it to Biff, would you? But he looks like he's actually trying to play properly and he just looks like he's never played before.
Wouldn't it? If Mark Wood tries to play properly, he can't bat at all. Yeah. But if you just tell him to go and slap it, he might get you 20 or 30.
Joffre's best innings was Headingley, to be fair to him, and then he got caught, didn't he, on square leg boundary. So I think we're all in agreement, let's be honest. We don't actually know what India are going to go with, but we don't think it's going to make a slight bit of difference.
I think I'm 100% right here, mate. I'm very confident.
If Kuldeep Yadav, the left arm leggy, plays, I'll be amazed.
Them three spinners,
mainly because he's not done that well for him.
That Washington has to. Is that Washington the one that got 60 odd for him against Australia?
Yeah,
he's playing, mate.
I play.
They've already said that Axar Patel's going to make his debut, aren't they? They ain't going to drop Ashwin just because.
Yeah, they won't drop him. I think he might open the bowling.
Washington Sunday, that's my prediction.
I think it's clearly not going to be Kuldeep if we're agreeing that Washington Sundar's going to play and we're also going to have Axar Patel.
How many spinners are we playing, mate?
They're not going to play four, dude, are they? Come on.
No, I think Cole Deep will come in and Washington Sunder won't play.
Oh.
Okay.
Ooh, that would be controversial. Which two seamers do you think, if we're going with that then? Which two seamers?
They're going to play Bumrah.
It's going to be Bumrah, I would say, but do you go Sharma, who obviously has done it for a while and Coley's a big fan of, apparently, or do you go Siraj, who plays for RCB and obviously did so well over in Australia and again, apparently, Coley's a big fan of, so I can't decide who they're going to go with, to be honest. I would probably go Sharma. But
supposedly he's been like training Ante for months to get ready for the series, I think. So.
Oh, yeah, he has. He's got himself fit for it, but you just never know. But we'll move on then to, I guess, what we're all probably more interested in, and that is England. Now, obviously, Zach Crawley managed to slip on his arse on the marble. Why there's marble outside the changing rooms, I don't know.
Well, I did think that when I saw that. Yeah. It's like any... I'd say shout out, but I don't want them to get shouted out because I think it's one of the most despicable things in the world. Any changing room in the world that has a tiled floor, like in club cricket, you know who you are and you should be absolutely ashamed of yourself because it's
don't like it, Orville and Dean.
No, but anywhere where you have to walk around tippy-toeing like a cat on an ice rink, no, not a fan.
So, obviously, with Crawley being out for at least the first two tests, that leaves a big gap at number three. It means their openers are sorted. It's going to be Burns and Sibley. There's no doubt about that. Who are we going then at number three? Because we're going to have a bit of a reshuffle. Who are we thinking? Because everyone was thinking Crawley. So, what are we going with, boys?
As long as it's not Moeen Ali, mate.
Well, we'll come on to him in a little bit. But what about number three? That's what I want to know. We all know that Roosters and Stokes are going to bat five. Four and five. Who are you having at number three? And number, you boys will say six. I'm going to say seven. Who are you having?
Go on, John.
You start. We'll go round clockwise on mine.
What are we saying first?
Number three. Do both. Go for both. Number three and your number six is what I'm guessing you're going to say.
Okay, so at number three, I've got Dan Lawrence.
Yeah.
So Dan Lawrence comes in.
And then I'm guessing number six is going to be the protege that is Ollie Pope.
No, I've got Stokes at six.
Stokes? Where's Ollie Pope batting?
He's not. He's not playing, mate.
Who's at number five? I am now confused.
You've got Moeen Ali at like four, haven't you?
No, I haven't got five. Hang on. I think I might have only picked 10 players here. Give me a second.
We'll move on to Andy. Well,
I've only picked ten players. I've only picked 10 players, so therefore I can have Ollie Pope as well. So therefore, I'm going to have Ollie Pope to come in at six, and Stokes will bat at five.
Like I expected. Aid, are you going to go the same?
That was Begnoland's first team captain last year.
Sorry.
Funny story, actually, just off topic.
Oh, God, here we go.
My old man was captain at Wedgwood and did pick me once. And then picked another player, so we had 12 players, and everyone 12 players turned up at the ground. And because I'm his son, sorry mate, you're out of the team. I was like, brilliant,
royalty.
That's incredible.
Yeah, shocker, wasn't it? That
I've never picked. I don't think I've ever picked 12 players before, but I have picked someone who told me that they couldn't play, and then it's turned out that they could play. So then I had to find somewhere for them to play.
Great.
I'm going Lawrence 3 and Pope 6, yeah.
Andy, any different?
Swapping them round. Pope 3, Lawrence 6.
Ooh, interesting.
People say Pope's the long-term number 3. If you haven't got a proper number 3, you know, how long is it going to be the long-term one for? See if you can do it.
He's more experienced, isn't he? Obviously, he's played more test cricket as well, which
fucking... Well, Lawrence or Crawley to the Wolves of it, batsman at three, protector, a bloke who's now got 10, 15 tests behind him.
Yeah, I can't disagree. I think I'd pick, obviously, both of them. I wouldn't mind which way round they are. My only difference to you boys is going to be that I wouldn't bat.
Oh, here we go.
Either them at six, I would bat them at seven. purely because if you want to do well in India, you need your three best batsmen to bat where they want and where they bat best. So you've got to have Root at 4, Stokes at 5, Butler at 6. Butler averages 48 at 6. He only averages 30 at number 7. He says he prefers batting 6. Bat him 6. Which I know isn't the traditional way of doing it. You'd rather
have keep him at 7. Mate, have you ever had a wicketkeeper batting above an actual batsman? No.
Well, England, start, England have you? Let's be honest. England have had wicketkeepers batting at every number possible.
The problem with that, Turner, is obviously he's only playing one test and then...
Oh, I know.
Order's got to change because Folks isn't going to bat 6. Everyone's just said
Folks will bat 7, but I don't necessarily think England will be that bothered about moving one person a position up who's an actual batsman. I don't think that will give them any bother.
I think I've just remembered something that I'd been thinking about in the week. So I've actually had a think, and something we said the other week. We said something along the lines that we were a bit disappointed because it feels like England are just kind of like giving up before this test series has already started by having like all this selection merry-go-round stuff. And actually, having slept on it a little bit, actually, I think to myself, we're actually kind of like pioneering how to look after them, aren't we?
Yeah, I think we're doing the complete right thing.
I was thinking about it when we were
ranting on here about it because every other podcast seems to be journalists moaning because they don't like Ed Smith. So they're using it as an excuse to beat him with. And I've been so close to wanting rant, but I thought, no, I'll leave it. But yeah, I'm with you. I think we're leading the way in how to do it properly and not wait for someone to have an issue and end up breaking down and ruining the career for them.
I think we mentioned it last week, didn't we, about Aaron Finch. And he said he's literally been in the bubble for like the last, 6 or 7 months. And he says it's affected him in the Big Bash because he hasn't got any runs, has he, at all?
Yeah.
And he says that he's just happy now. Doesn't even look at his kit bag or nothing, just straight down the beach, can chill for a bit. Probably helps our lads out, doesn't it?
Yeah.
You hope, one of the things that I like kind of hope from the whole thing as well is if you're a squad and you know, and you see that and you kind of think, oh, like they're looking out for me. That's good, isn't it? So you'd think to yourself, oh, if they're looking out for me, I want to go out there and I want to kind of like do my best, you know what I mean? Not to think that they wouldn't do the best for any reason because they're playing for the country, aren't they? But you'd hope that you'd think to yourself, they're looking after me, they're thinking of my best interests, I'm going to go out there and I'm going to do X, Y, and Z for them, run through a brick wall, I don't know, whatever.
Yeah, and to be fair, James Bracey said that earlier in that interview. He says how they actually sat down and spoke about how the 20-odd players are there, but they're all players good enough to play test cricket. They're all players that the management, the skipper, all trust to go out and do their job and be good enough. And it's not just a case of where we've previously had 12, 13 players good enough and then anyone we pull up, it's a bit of a hit and hope that they might be good enough. They genuinely believe that all 24 players, whoever it is that are out there, are more than good enough to play and have an effect, a positive effect on a test match in India. So I don't think it's as bad as people have made out. Next thing then, what is going to be your bowling attack? I think, well, from what's been said, it looks like it's going to be Moeen Ali, Jack Leach, Archer, and then one of Jimmy or Broad. What are you boys going with, Andy? I'll start with you.
In 8, 9, 10, 11, I'd have... 8's not an obvious one, is it? There's nobody who can actually bat out of this. I need ball.
Yeah, we need bat deep, but we haven't got anyone.
Nah, there's the proper club cricket link of all this. Whoever's batting at 8 can't bat.
Yeah. I'll have less of that, mate, because I bat 8.
Exactly.
If you've got Chris Folkes on your side, it suddenly looks a lot stronger, doesn't it? But if you've got to find 4 out of Archer, Bess, I mean, Bess is okay, but he ain't going to get a test 100, is he, in his career?
Never know. Weirder things have happened.
I'm not sure. Bess, Archer, Leach, Broad, my 8, 9, 10, 11.
Ginge and Ninja?
Yeah, I'd probably go the same, mate, yeah. If only Chris Wokes could bowl Broad, mate, and then we'd have that bit of batting then, wouldn't we?
I think he'll come in for the pink ball test, I think.
I was worried, though, with...
Are we playing a pink ball test?
Yeah, third test, 9 till 5 it's on as well. It's
James Anderson's got to play
I did not know that.
third test.
Well, I was worried with Crawley being out. I thought everyone's going to go up one, or Ali was going fit in at like three or bat seven, and we're just going to bat literally top six, and then that was it. Then we'd have five bowlers, but because I think he did bat three the last time we were there, didn't he?
He has batted three before. I don't pick Moeen to bat eight, never mind three.
Did you see what Kohli said about him, by the way? He has got no weaknesses in his game. We don't know how to get him out. I was like, you are joking me.
Have they watched the last 2 years of cricket?
He averages short ball.
Doesn't he average something daft like 40, 50 odd with a ball and about 20s with the bat in the last like 2 or 3 years or something?
Not
crazy.
Very good.
His average in India is good though, just to point that out.
Yeah, but he hasn't played there in about 3 years, has he, or something daft? 4 years? I don't see Moeen. Why you'd pick Moeen, but I...
So is Moeen likely to play then? Is that what you
seem to think he's going to play eight, which I don't understand why you back Dom Bess all summer and make out he's our number one spinner and that he's the one that we're backing to then change him. I can understand changing your mind for Jack Leach because I think Jack Leach is the better spinner. Might not be the better all-round package with bat and fielding, but I don't understand why you then go back to Moeen Ali, who's in his 30s, coming, let's be honest, coming towards the end of his career anyway. And has done nothing for a couple of years in Red Bull cricket, to say the least, why you would then turn around and say, actually, we've backed your best, but bye-bye. I don't get it.
And that's why I think Best plays. That's Best plays for me. I think they'll go with Anderson just because he had the best game. I've got no issues going like him back-to-back with back-to-back from the last game because they've had a bit of a rest, haven't they? And he had a great game. The last one in Sri Lanka, so I think he plays, and I think Best plays, and I think Leach plays. I just can't see Moeen Ali coming in because if you've backed Best now for 12 months or however long it is, over 12 months, probably 2 years now, really, hasn't it? You've got to give him a chance really to get going in India.
Also, we saw with like Leach and Bess, it took him 10 or 15 overs to get going, didn't he?
Yeah,
he had a while. And obviously, Ali hasn't. I don't know when the last time he played cricket. To be honest, he might have had a couple of games in the RPL, didn't he? But
he had a couple.
He didn't play very often.
If you can class them as games, I mean, lasting a couple of balls at most. I think did he even get did he get run out at the non-strike?
Oh, he got run out
in one game.
Like a diamond, didn't he? Something?
Yeah, so if you can call them games, he did have
some. I do think Anderson could play the first one, actually, now you said about that third test with the pink ball, because if they're going to rotate him every game, Anderson's going to be better with the pink ball, isn't he? So Anderson might
I think Anderson will play this first one, and then I think Broad might play two. But I think they'll go Anderson, Archer, Best, Leach for the first one would be my four.
You're going to rotate Archer and Wood, aren't you?
I think Archer will play three. Archer, I think, will play at least three of the four tests, possibly all
four. Wood back for the last two?
Summit riding on the last one. Wood's meant to be back for the last two, but I think Archer will play the first three because I think they'll want him in the pink ball as well. And then I think it depends. If we're 3-0 down or 2-0 down, I think you'll find Wood will play the last one. But I think if by any miracle England are still in it, I think he might play the fourth one as well. To be fair, and I'm interested to see how Archer goes. But I think basically we all agree on the bowlers and the 11. The only other thing that I've seen mentioned is some people said, what is England's best attack? It's Leach, Broad, Anderson, Archer. Instead of worrying about the fact that we haven't got two spinners good enough, just don't play two spinners and go with your best attack and hope it works. I don't see him doing that. But I can see us doing it by the third test when we're probably 2-0 down and it's a pink ball game. I wouldn't be shocked to see that line up come the third test because it would be in pink ball. But I don't see us starting like that. I think they'll go with the two spinners. That's why they've taken the players they have. So I think we'll be pretty much spot on, other than I think they'll make the wrong decision, if I'm honest, and they'll pick Moeen. But we'll see how that goes, I guess. Right, last thing then, let's do some predictions. So, what I'm going to suggest is we're going to, in the next couple of weeks, announce a charity partner, someone who we're going to sort of suggest that people donate to as a way of sort of supporting the podcast, support this charity. We'll announce that in a couple of weeks. But what I think we should do, and I haven't asked you whether you're happy with this, boys, so be it. We all select or pick a result for the series, England's top wicket taker and England's top run scorer. We all put a fiver in. If you somehow get it right, perfectly right, so you get, say, 3-1 India, Archer with 20 wickets, Root with 400 runs, then you get to take home all the money. However, if you none of us get it perfectly right, the money goes to the charity.
Yeah, good idea. Because none of us get it right.
Let's be honest, we're going to get nowhere near.
Yeah. Of course, Lally's on furlough, isn't he? So he's just free money.
Yeah, can you put me fiver and four in?
Oh, way up. Now, this is meant to be for us three, but Andy, you are welcome to join in if you want to. It's up to you. No one will call you tight, honest, if you say no.
Yeah, go on then, yeah.
Right then, who wants to predict first, or is it going to be me by some chance?
Yeah, it's you going to be you first chance.
Yeah,
what about you?
Right, I'm going to go for India 3-1. Jofra, in fact, I better write these down because otherwise I'll forget and then we won't know who's got what.
We are to be fair, mate, we are recording the podcast.
Yeah, but that means I've got to listen through 40 minutes of us talking to remember it.
It's an extra listen, mate.
Extra listen.
It is an extra listen, yeah, true, good point.
Reach, so, it's all about the reach.
All about the reach. I'm going to go India 3-1. I'm going to go Jofra for top wicket taker. And I'm going to go for 18 wickets.
We've got to get the wickets and runs correct as well.
We'll say you've got to get the wickets within 2 or something, and we'll say runs within like 50 or something.
I'll just give me 5 and out, Turner, if you like.
Yeah, I thought you might say that. I'm going to go Root, and I'm going to go 502.
500?
Yeah, I think he's going to hit a double ton again at some point.
God.
I'm going to bat the boy.
Do you not think he's burnt them all out in Sri Lanka?
No, I'm backing him to have the year of his career and win as the Ashes. That's my hope.
Okay.
I'm also about to stop drinking in a minute. But there you go. Jono, what are you game with?
I'll go 3-1 India.
I think that might be a popular one, yeah.
Well, I'm just clinging. The pessimist in me thinks we're going to get dicked, but the optimist thinks we might take a test off him.
Got to hope, haven't you?
Yeah. So I'll have that. I'll have Jack Leach, top wicket taker, with 20, please.
20. Yeah.
And I will have Ben Stokes, leading run scorer, and I'm going to go 312.
Oof, God, we are going. You think we're going to win a test? We're going to win a test in a four-match series, and our top run scorer is only going to score 312.
Well, I didn't say what the split would be, mate. He could get 312 in one game. don't forget, we played in India against a lad who's literally got 300 against us, and then that was we never saw him again. So
you have a fair point. Aid, what are you game with?
I'm going 3-0 India.
3-0. So we can draw one.
It's going to be a very high scoring game on one of them.
Yeah, probably so. I can't screw that.
I hope we win the series and we won't win a test, but I don't think we're going to. I can't look past Joe Root, I'll be honest.
I'm assuming that's not for wickets. Well, you're doing wickets first,
mate.
The
full package, mate. for the runs.
How many, dare I ask?
468.
Yeah.
Oh, God, leading wicket taker.
Just pick a name, mate. Pick a name, pick a number.
Your five is going to...
Right, because I'm being generous, I'm going Moeen Ali.
Oh, my God.
Wow. With 3. No, I'm joking.
What are you getting?
Come on. 16.
16. Right, then that leaves Andy. I think he is. Well, you could either really go for it here, Andy, or you could just edge your bets and probably accept you're giving a fiver away to charity, but at least you might look less of a tool than the rest of us here.
4-0 India.
Yeah, I thought so. Smart decision.
Point.
Having bigged up Root and Stokes in the original one, I'm going to take a complete U-turn and say Ollie Pope, top run scorer.
Popey,
oh,
yes.
God, he's not picked up a bat for 12 months, Andy.
He's not even in John Oak's side, seems he's only playing 10.
Yeah, we've got 10 men.
He's that bad. Andy won't pick him when he's only got 10 men on the Saturday.
3-9-3 runs.
3-9-3. and
Wickets, Leach. On the base, he might be the only one who plays all four.
Possibly so.
Yeah, good point.
Just saying it out there, by the way, I'd be well happy with 393 runs in a season. These lads are going to be looking to get 300, 400 runs in a series.
Mate, I'd be happy with 312 runs in three seasons. So
should we do a segment? I'd love to know, like, a proper full class international. How many runs do you reckon they get in club cricket?
I wouldn't like to think, if I'm honest with you. It worries me how you watch them on TV.
Play the full season.
Full season, how many runs are they getting?
Bearing in mind that, like, some of these lads hit 1,000 runs a season and they're facing spinners who bowl as quick and who turn it square and bowl it as quick as some of the fast bowlers.
It's over 1,000.
It's not gamey.
Well, put it this way, the best individual season I've ever seen at club level was our former pro, Kim Barnett, and he got nearly 1,300 runs in Division 3.
Nice.
And it felt like he was getting 100 every other week, is how it felt. I think he ended up with about six.
Jeez. Yeah, so,
And he was 50 at the time, by the way. Let's throw that one out.
I think if you put Root now currently in, I think he'd honestly hit a ton, probably 90% of weeks, and he'd probably pick up a 5 for most weeks for his off-spin. If I'm really honest, I think he'd...
Oh, he's getting more than 5 for me.
Probably, yeah. I wouldn't be surprised one week if he hit a double ton and then bowled them all out and took all 10, to be fair. But, yeah, I don't even think that's worth thinking about, Jono. It's making me upset thinking about it. Right.
Do you not think that they, like, really struggle against some horrible little 13-year-old trundler?
I'd love to think so, but no.
DQ?
Yeah. I reckon if Dave Quinton, my father-in-law, strolled in, I reckon he'd cause Joe Root all sorts.
Probably so.
All I'll say is Joe Root's never seen a bowler like Dave.
I hope Dave listens to this, by the way.
He has to, mate, father-in-law.
Yeah, true. Right, just before we get on to club cricket, Randy, as been mentioned earlier by Jono, obviously Andy's been quite a few sort of away tours of England. So just wanted to have a little chat about Where's been the best places you've been, where you want to go, where what you'd suggest to other people who are considering it, really, who are thinking about going?
Yeah, I mean, I've done quite a few now, less so in the last few years, because having a house and a proper job sort of gets in the way of it.
A laugh.
Yeah, responsibilities.
But it's a great one. I mean, I've done Sri Lanka 4 times, I think. And that's my favourite one, by some distance. Last time I went, I ended up buying everybody else's tickets. There's a group of about 15 of us who go. And I got everybody else's ticket and forgot to get my own. So I ended up having to watch most of it from the fort. Which is not my finest hour. But yeah, it's... I mean, if anybody who sort of wants to go, you've always got a sort of set thing to talk about in the bar before or after. So you can always sort of make friends. And first 2 or 3 I went to on my own. And you don't have any problem sort of chatting to people. So if you want to go, definitely go for it.
Best away ground you've been to, Andy, is my question.
Best away ground.
Best ground.
The MCG is good.
Jono didn't want an Aussie answer. You're not worked this out by now.
yeah, I mean, it's iconic, isn't it? Boxing Day Test. Yeah. But yeah, Cape Town's good. With the sort of the Table Mountain in the background. It's incredibly hot. I think it's the hottest place I've ever been. It's like 48 one day. So unless you sort of sitting a handful of bits under the trees, it's a long day. But that's good. Grenada's good because the ground's right in the middle of town, so you can pop out as and when you want for a drink or something to eat. And fortunately, it was quite a slow test, so you weren't missing that much if you wandered out into town. Yeah, I mean, everywhere's got its own sort of pros and cons.
What about the worst place?
Ooh. That's what I was going to say.
And worst place and reason why?
Big Calcutta.
Ooh, the Indian tourist board are not
impressed with it. It'll be closed down, mate.
The podcast officially reported by 30,000 Indian listeners.
It's a brilliant ground, and it's a sort of real experience to go to, but it's the only place I've ever been where you sort of have a pint and there's rats running around your table.
Oh, God.
So last week we had James Anderson comparison to Kapil Dev.
And I was slagging off Calcutta for being rat infested. We're doing well with the global audience here. Quick question, last one, before we get on to the club cricket stuff, because I don't want us to have a 3-hour long episode. I was going to say, what's the funniest thing you've seen on a tour? Because I've seen plenty of videos of people at Barmy Army who are in questionable states, shall we say, at certain points.
Yeah, I mean, it's... You've probably... All the funny bit stuff you've probably seen. It's... The whole thing's just sort of a good atmosphere. It's not sort of... It's... In some ways, it's like a sort of football crowd, but in some ways, it's sort of a bit more sort of laid back. Because obviously, if you sat drinking for 7-8 hours in 30-degree heat, you see some people who are
in a state.
Yeah.
Well, you've now made us all want to go to South Africa and Sri Lanka, I feel. So if you want to buy us our tickets, we won't complain. Right, we'll move on.
Buy my tickets now. Now I've got other stuff to pay for.
Right, we'll move on to club cricket then. So, obviously, each week we're trying to have a little bit about club cricket. Obviously, to be fair, it does mainly end up being around the North Staffs League and sort of local area, but hopefully it also gives people from around the country, they can recognise very similar things they've probably seen, because I think club cricket's probably more or less the exact same across the country. Now, Andy, you're obviously heavily involved in Betley, so do you want to explain to us first of all a bit about your life in club cricket and what you do now up at Betley?
So I've been playing there since 2014. My old mate, Carl Thorpe, he got me involved there because they were short one day.
Shout out to Shroomy, by the way, Nantwich Town legend. Shroomy, friend of the pod and Betley Cricket Club and associated sports man.
Yeah, top man is I haven't really called Shumi for a long time, but yeah, I did originally know him. He got me involved in a game at Meekins when they were short. I think both teams basically just played as many ringers as they could get hold of.
You're the ringer.
I was a ringer, yeah, one of about eight on the team. Because obviously Stone League slightly less strict on
registrations
than the North Staffs League. Played there, enjoyed it, got a few runs, which was, I think, the last time I got any runs.
I'm just starting for my first ones, to be fair.
Start as you mean to go on, mate, that's fine.
and I sort of just got involved, sort of said, oh, you know, yeah, sure, again, give me a shout. So they did. I don't know why. And I've sort of just been gradually doing more and more up there since then. Shumi don't play there anymore, and a lot of the lads who play there don't play there anymore, but we've still got a sort of good core of sort of regular Saturday, Sunday players. So I've taken on doing bits on the bar, bits of umpiring, umpired Ashes Mob.
Yeah, that was fun, wasn't it? Quick one for you. At Betley, don't try and cut one off your off stump, because it turns out you'll end up inside edging it and you'll be walking back to the pavilion pretty quick.
It's a good mantra on most grounds, in fairness, not just Betley.
Yeah, I should know better coming from Wedgwood, where everyone knows it don't bounce above your ankle. But
don't go back on a Wedgwood track, is it?
Exactly. So, to be fair, Andy, one of the reasons I wanted to get you onto the pod, as well as obviously getting another Vale fan on here, is to talk a bit about
the other Vale fan.
Yeah, the other one in local cricket. Is to talk a bit about, obviously, being involved in a club that's not necessarily the biggest club around, and sort of building clubs up and improving them and getting more people involved, because I think for a lot of clubs across the country, that's going to be a big thing coming out of COVID, is having to almost rebuild, I guess, a little bit. So I just wanted to see what you thought you'd seen at Batley and at other clubs that is a good idea that maybe other clubs can go out there and try and use as a way of trying to build themselves back up after COVID.
I mean, it's tough at the moment, isn't it? Because we don't know when we're going to start or when, what sort of format the season is going to be. So at the moment, a lot of stuff's on hold. I mean, we've done pretty well on grants from various people this year to sort of keep the bills paid, keep the doors, so the doors open, but making sure there is cricket next year. And, you know, sort of trying to keep everything going. You know, WhatsApp groups are always good. Virtual quiz nights, despite the fact that everybody probably had enough of those in the first lockdown. It just sort of keeps everybody involved, because you don't want people sort of drifting away, particularly if we have a delayed start this year. So there's over in a normal winter, we'd have a Stoke City sportsman's night with Liam Lawrence, who's a friend of the club, and a comedy night, which sort of keeps us going. But over this winter's obviously been a bit trickier. So I don't know what Wedgwood or Biggie Ender, if they've got anything planned or anything's worked for them this winter.
On a Wedgwood, what's it? We did a lot of the quizzes and stuff, and did like an online festival sort of thing for a couple of nights. But they were all sort of back in the first couple of lockdowns. To be fair, we haven't. It's been more sort of just chats on the. Jono's just brought his really cute dog up onto his lap, everyone who knows me knows that I love dogs, so I'm just being completely distracted there. We've tried stuff. I think now it's gone down to sort of now being more, I guess, WhatsApps and things. It's less big group things. Now we've been doing more sort of smaller group things based on your teams and stuff. But I think, as you say, I think social media and just trying to stay in touch has been key. And I think that's the events and social media and just getting yourselves out there, I guess, to local communities is the big thing to do at any time to grow your club. I think we found at Wedgwood that having the events, having the social media, getting people to pass on what a good time they're having, especially like junior training and stuff, is the best way to grow and probably the only way to grow. I don't know what the soon-to-be chairman, or is he new chairman at Big Len, Jono, thinks.
What's that?
Good listening there, Jono.
Sorry, mate.
From the teacher as well. That's you up on the consequences board, innit?
Yeah, I'm there.
Just saying what we found works for clubs to sort of help them expand, help them survive.
I think Andy's hit the nail on the head so far for this winter. The first name on the game is survival, first and foremost, putting the club first. Survival is more important, making sure that there's a club there to open your doors. When the season does restart again, obviously, at Bignall End, we run as a bar. We're open every day of the week, 24 hours a day. We're not 24 hours a day. That's a lie. So don't turn up in the middle of the night.
Don't tell the lies.
The licensing
agency aren't very happy suddenly.
Okay, so I rephrase it. Officially, we're not 24 hours a day. But we are open pretty much every day of the year, including Christmas Day. Do you know what I mean? So we operate as jointly as a cricket club and also as the bar side as well. So the social side is a massive, massive side on it, and we need to make sure that that's still there when we reopen. Because at the end of the day, the two go hand in hand. Without the cricket, the club wouldn't be there, and without the club, the cricket section wouldn't be there. So that's really important. So working on that. I think this winter, obviously, Aid will back me up on this, is kind of like recruitment, getting people interested in cricket has been quite tough. Although, like, we've been quite fortunate because we've had a lot of positive news, like in terms of people wanting to play and missed out last year and really wanting to come back to the game, which has been good. So I think the main thing is just reaching out. Communication's been key. Yeah, I mean, no one wants to harass anyone, but I'm a big believer that if you don't ask, you don't get. So staying in touch with people, staying positive with people. At the end of the day, we all want the same thing. We want to be successful in whatever we do. We want to have fun, don't we? And we want our club to do well. We're all club people here, and everyone who kind of listens to this is going to be involved in club cricket. And we want the life of the game to continue locally. That's all we want. And I mean, we've got three really good, proud, successful clubs within 100, 150 yards of each other, half a mile of each other in Audley, Bingle and Wood Lane. If you stretch yourself a bit further afield within a couple of miles, we've got Betley not too far down the road from us. We've got Leasit not too far down the road. We've got Silverdale. You've got some big names of local cricket there, and all any of us would want at any of those clubs, and all of us want here is survival at this moment in time. So I'm thinking of all of the people out there, like Andy, like me, like all of us here who are trying to look out for their clubs, because I'm sure it is frightening, and I do worry, because I don't think there's some clubs going to come out of this okay, and that'll be a real shame.
Yeah, I think you've hit nail on the head there. I think the message from all of us, and I'm sure most people involved in helping run cricket clubs anyway, is offer your time, offer your whatever help you can to your club, and don't go and play golf this year just because you played a few rounds last year. Don't still support your cricket club and still support other cricket clubs as well as much as you can. I think that's going to be a big one that I think we're going to suggest as a club, is when we play away, we stay, we have a couple of jugs and we stick around and we put some money behind the other club's bar, because at the end of the day, if they aren't there, we haven't got anyone play that week. And I think everyone's been hit just as badly, probably. Some clubs probably a lot worse, to be fair, than Wedgwood, where I play, because we're lucky in the sense that we use the factory's ground, and so we aren't having to necessarily pay for the ground as such. As I know, obviously, other places have to pay for their ground rental-wise and stuff. So I think that's the big message. I think, as you say, communication, social media, keep people involved, and those people who are involved, please stay involved, I guess, is the message.
I think the social side is probably one of the main things, isn't it? Why, you know, obviously we all play because we enjoy the game. Well, some of us enjoy the game.
Playing the rain card, aren't you, normally?
Yeah, but obviously I think the social side is the key thing, isn't it? Because after you've been in the field in the baking hot sun for, what, 7 hours or something, after a game, it's enjoyable, you know, even with the opposition, just having a chat with them, you rip into each other, don't you? And it's like if you're drinking down the club and it's an enjoyable and everyone gets on, you've got the footy on, you've got whatever's on, you're more likely to stay down the club after a game than go down your local pub, aren't you? And then if, say, like for me, a couple of my mates will come down the club, they'll put some money behind the bar, and then it just goes from there. On a Sunday, we'll come down, watch a three team, have a few beers, and even like on a Saturday night, after, in normal circumstances, when the club closes, you go around some lads from cricket's house, don't you? And you're all together, and that keeps everyone together. And it's like we've signed a lad this week, and we've got him probably in. Obviously, he'll be playing first team cricket, but last year he come up and enjoyed the social side, which I think attracted him, knowing that he'll get on with people and he'll enjoy it after a game. So he'll probably enjoy it on the pitch. And I think you play your best cricket when you're enjoying it, don't you? So
here, here. Yeah.
It's so sport fundamentally, isn't it? I mean, nobody plays at our level because they just like cricket and wander off at the end of it. You play because you enjoy the company of your mates, don't you?
Yeah.
Beer afterwards, and that's part of the day.
Mm. It's the best. It's best. The best part of the day, that was. Apart from tea.
Best. Sitting, eating, and drinking.
Ordering a kebab at the end of the night when you're absolutely legs.
Shout out to Family Kebab as well, who essentially must pick up more money off us of a Saturday night than anyone.
You'll do anything, get some free stuff, you will, won't
you? Yeah, I will.
Shout out what you're doing.
He's desperate.
Yeah. I'm desperate.
Teach your life, sword. Right, last thing then for this podcast, because this game be probably an hour and 40-minute podcast at this rate, is Room 101, and we're going to let our guest tonight, Andy, select our room 101. One thing he would love to get out of club cricket. Now, actually, before I forget, last week, it took a lot of maths from me to work it out. But in the end, the helmets, both the club lid helmets and also the... Oh, God, he's got his Sam Curran and Speed Dealer glasses on now.
Getting ready, mate. Getting ready for the 101.
Great. And also the unmatched helmets did just end up being voted to stay in room 101 only just though.
They're in, mate. It says in the scorebook, and that's all that matters. They're in. So get your absolute sleds in the bin. Get those badges off your helmets. Get them in the bin. Disgusting.
Right, then. Andy, you got to follow that up. Can we have something else that's going to stay in the bin? Or is it going to be something that survives?
I hope it doesn't survive. Shit dressing. So when you're going out and somebody's decided to put on, drill or grime or whatever before you go out to play and just decrap everybody, so rather than the whole point of trying to, get everybody built up with some Stone Roses or Oasis or something, proper upbeat, you're stuck with crap, and it's usually it's the same people every week. So I'm not gonna name names on here.
Oh, come on, Andy, name names.
Name names. That's what we're names.
Mean. Get us banned.
So I'm not having there needs to be a music committee in every team, two or three people who have a proper taste in music. Or just band dressing room music. If you can't do it properly, just don't do it.
Don't do it at all.
I do like a bit of music before and after a game, but I do think it's got to be the right music.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I agree with that.
There's nothing worse than when someone goes, 1 minute, let me put this on, and you've never heard of them, and it's clearly something that's in the charts, but I don't think anyone above the age of probably... I normally find it's some of the younger lads, to be fair, and it's something that no one over the age of probably 21 has ever listened to in their life.
You're also never going to please everyone, because you're going to get the... senior players that are going to want to listen to their music.
Oh, no, you have to get mate. You get the playlist right, there's no problem.
Oh, yeah.
It's be a committee.
Yeah. Right, in all seriousness, would we vote to Bennett? I'd vote to Bennett. Nothing does me head in more than a bit of grime or gangster rap. I want me Oasis on, or even stuff like The Jam or The Clash, even stuff like that will suit me, Rolling Stones, as long as it's not Pitbull or Stormzy or what, Dave.
It's Stormzy, too.
Not about that. Don't get it. People singing about Thiago Silva in a rap is completely beyond me. Dude, what are you saying? Do you want to keep the in Down With The Kids music, or are you going to...
To a certain degree. It depends. Ooh, like I say, it all depends. I definitely want to keep changing my music. But like I say, it's got to be a decent playlist, especially if you've got to listen to the opposition as well.
Yeah. Jono?
I'll be honest, mate, I quite like a good sing song, especially after. I'm more after than before. Before, it annoys me because normally I'm tired and miserable.
Before, he's miserable before a game.
I'm tired. I'm very tired and miserable.
That's
generally.
He's a skipper and you're having to run round.
Shout out to Jono. We got the team 80 for 9 once, I think it was, and he was having a right go at everyone.
It just wasn't good enough, mate.
his quote was, which goes round the club now, is, not today, mate.
People are trying to cross me, mate. It wasn't the right day. I was in bad mood that day.
And to be fair, he's got a point, because I think we were 9 down somewhere when we chased it down.
Well, it is what it is, isn't it? I'm gonna vote against that, mate. I would like to keep the music, because especially after the game.
We're not on about just music, though. It's in particular grime, rap, gangster.
I'll go with that, then. I'd quite happily... I've got a particular selection of like after game songs, so like Spandau Ballet would be in my after game victory song. A bit of Casey and the Sunshine Band would also probably be in my post-game.
Let's be honest, it's karaoke classics or like indie football anthems.
Yeah, unless you're playing something that you'd hear on the steps of Reflex, then I'm not really interested.
Reflex, what a place.
Oh, remember mate. That? I hope that reopens one day.
My favourite place, that is, Reflex.
Oh, gold. Right, I think that's a good place to leave it. We'll put a poll on Twitter. People can vote whether they're voting for Dave, AJ, Tracy, Pitbull, Skrillex, or whether they're voting for something actually decent that isn't going to make me ears bleed. So we'll put that on. So big thanks to Andy for joining us tonight. Much appreciated. And we hope this won't be your only appearance. Maybe get you back for the end of series review so we can look back on them predictions and cry about the £5 we're all giving to charity.
Yes,
big thanks to James Bracey for doing the interview for us. That was really good, and I don't think we could have asked for a better first interview to have on the actual podcast. So big thanks to James for that. Obviously, please go and follow us on Twitter at ThirdManCrickUK. Please subscribe to the pod. Please go on Facebook, Instagram, all of those. And if we'd love to actually see a couple of reviews, because I'll be honest, we're getting quite a few people messaging us saying, oh, the pod's really good for this, and this. But they won't go and put a review on Apple. So go and stick us a review on, because it just looks better for us and actually makes it look like people listen to us and don't think we're up. Three absolute. I'll let you pick what word you want to put there. But yeah, so please help us out by following and subscribing if you can. Next week we'll be back. We'll review the first test. We'll probably look back on the Big Bash as well. And fingers crossed we're going to have another guest with us for a little interview, who again will be hopefully be a pro player who's played a little bit for England. So that should be really good again. So big thanks to the lads for being on tonight. Big thanks to everyone listening. Big thanks to Woodstock for supporting us. And we'll see you next week. Cheers. Down at Third Man, the cricket podcast. Proudly supported by Woodstock Cricket.